Thank you for joining with us for another episode of Morning Briefings here on the Pipeline Intercession for the President and on our podcast. If you have any dreams that you have about the Office of the President, please send them to pip@christiancenterstreetport.com. We're so thankful that you all have joined in with us on this prayer journey, and we look forward to standing with you not only today, but in the days ahead. So with that, we'll go ahead and join today's broadcast as we talk about the news and stand on the wall for this nation and the Office of the President. Good morning, everyone. Zach Garskadden coming to you live from North Carolina. And today is another glorious day to be back with each and every one of you who follow along as we stand here and pray for the Office of the President and the destiny of this nation, which is to save souls and get this nation back to serving the Lord in this time and season. And today, I titled it Breaking Barrenness, because the portion of the the prayer points in the Reordering Your Day here is going through the story of Hannah and the birth of Samuel in 1 Samuel 1 through 3. And I want to focus on the beginning of that, because when we know the life of Samuel and the life of Eli and his sons, of God removing them from that role because of the disobedience to the service of being a Levi in serving the Lord and offering the sacrifices. But in the story of Hannah, remember that story in 1 Samuel 1. I'll pull it up here. Is Hannah was barren, didn't have children, and her husband was married. He had two wives. His name was Elkanah. And he had two wives. One was Hannah, and the other name was Peninnah. And the other wife had children, but Hannah did not. And every year they would go up for sacrifices, and Hannah would pray, and her husband's other wife would make fun of her and pick at her. And then eventually Hannah went down to Shiloh, and she began to pray at night and through the night, and Eli saw her speaking, moving her mouth, thought she was drunk, and she wasn't drunk, and she cried out saying, "I'm barren, I'm crying out for the Lord, for a son, for a child," and then ultimately makes the vow of saying, if I have a son, I will dedicate him to the Lord, and I'll give him to the Lord. And so the verse I want to focus on here is, as she goes through and she prays through the night, then eventually they worshiped. Here in verse 19, they arose early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord and returned again to their house in Ramah. And Elkanah had relations with Hannah and his wife, and the Lord remembered her. It came about in due time after Hannah conceived that she gave birth to a son, and she named him Samuel, because I have asked him of the Lord. And then the story goes on in verses 2 and chapters 2 and 3. Of the fruitfulness and the relationship that Samuel builds with the Lord in his early ages. And so through that, we want to ask the Lord to break any spirit of barrenness on us in the season ahead. And what we see here in Scripture is that just because we go through times of barrenness doesn't mean that it's ultimately the worst thing. Is God is doing something in us. He's causing us to, as in Philippians, talking about us, doing things not for our own will, but for the will of others, and putting down sacrifices and being love towards other people. And that takes a dying of yourself to be able to bring forth fruit. And so when we see here in Samuel that Hannah is being in a place of darkness, in a place of barrenness, so that the Lord can produce patience through her and ultimately have a seed sown not only in her, but in the nation of Israel, so that there can be a multiplication in the season ahead. And what fruits we see of that as we read throughout Scripture of that. And so we just want to break that spirit of barrenness that might be on us now as we head into the next season. All right. So with that, we have a few things to get to today. And again, we want to focus on not just what's happening between Russia and Ukraine. We want to focus on the White House's response, the things that they can control and handle. And there hasn't been a lot of news out about what they can do other than the supplying of planes to Ukraine. But there has been a major response yesterday from the White House on multiple levels of the administration through multiple talking heads about what steps should be taken in order to lower gas prices. And I'll get to that here in a second. But first, we want to talk about the peace treaty that has been offered to Ukraine from Russia, in supposedly that Russia has said that it will immediately stop its invasion, military action towards Ukraine, if and only if Ukraine does exactly what Russia wants, which is to amend its constitution to give Crimea to Russia, to give the Donbas regions and the other region there that Russia itself pass in its constitution or in its laws, legislature, to be independent of Ukraine so that they could then go in and take it over. And then, and only then, and a few more other things, will Russia cease going forward in its military actions, and it will not ever go forward in taking any more land of Ukraine as long as Ukraine decides to not join NATO or the EU or build up its military at any point whatsoever, basically making itself completely vulnerable to Russian invasions, even moving forward in the future. And so this is a false peace treaty at best. I mean, this is putting a gun to Ukraine's head and saying, the West is not going to help you, so you're going to do what we need to say to do. In all of that, understand there's pressure coming from within inside Russia and the military and other people involved to push Putin to do something because this is getting completely out of hand. And so we're seeing that on the public sphere of what is being talked about here with Russia and Ukraine. There are still talks with Secretary of State Blinken on how NATO and the U.S. should respond and help or not help Ukraine in this situation. So there needs to be wisdom there for the administration in how to deal with the things that are happening in this situation, because this is affecting a lot of other things. And when we see this happening, we need to intently pray, because there's also the fact that the U.S. and Iran are in talks to get back to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. What is scary, and Jay Sekulow pointed this out yesterday, is Russia is the broker of this deal. Let me repeat that. We have a war going on in Ukraine. We have nations depending upon Russia for oil. You have nations not putting sanctions on Russian oil energy. And at the same time, you have Russia negotiating, being a broker for Iran and the U.S. for the Iran nuclear deal. Conflict of interest, might I add. And so we're seeing this all play out. Russia has an upper hand, and this, it's going to all start to make sense of why certain moves aren't being made with the U.S. and other countries, because Russia has a hand in each country's back pocket in one thing or another. And so now we're moving into U.S. and European nations are discussing importing banning imports of Russian oil, even though for Russia, it's now all of a sudden being reported of 30%, but it has been 40%. And if the Nord Stream 2 pipeline were to go into effect, it would be even more oil and natural gas that would be going to the rest of Europe while these nations are trying to not only get away from oil and fossil fuels, as the Biden administration is trying to do, but trying to go towards wind and solar, which is not scalable, to put it mildly. And so each nation is trying to figure out how to go around that. There are bills from Congress and Senate that will hopefully be the steps that they believe are needed to actually get things done. And I'll get to that here at the end, because what's going on in Ukraine and Russia has a lot to do with how our budgets possibly could get passed and some of the erroneous government spending that will be toppled on to hope ultimately get people to vote for the bill to get things passed so we don't go into a default, which we were in a crisis before this of determining what should be in the budget for the rest of this year. And then now you're going to start talking about for the next year as well. So this is something for us to continually pray about. But here I want to focus on some things about this administration and their heart in all of this. So despite the fact that, you know, day one, via stroke of a pen, the Biden administration goes out and kills any leases sold on public land to oil and gas industries. And I want to play these clips from the press secretary, Jen Psaki, on her response, or more so the president's response, to skyrocketing gas prices. And the reason I want to play these is because we have to understand the mindset of this administration in this season, so we know how to pray for them coming out of this season and into the next. So her first response, when asked, what is the White House, what is the president's message to Americans going to the gas station today and seeing gas prices? Listen to this answer.
I want to read to you, if I could, Jen, some comments from people we've met at gas stations today. One woman saying, I just never imagined to see the cost of gas be this high. Another said, it's a huge stressor to my financial situation, a huge stressor. It's kind of like something I've stressed about, like during the day, will I be able to afford gas? How much money do I have? What is the White House, what is the president's message to Americans who are going to the gas station today and seeing prices so high?
This is a great question. Because it's not just a hypothetical. It's feet on the ground, going to where the people are and asking them a question and then taking that to the president. And here's the response.
Well, the president's message is that he is going to do everything he can to reduce the impact on the American people, including the price of gas at the tank. What is also true is that because of the actions of President Putin.
Okay, again, we talked about this yesterday. Denying the realities of the situation, of blaming Putin for this. Meanwhile, before Russia invaded Ukraine, gas had shot up well over a dollar, and in some places $1.30, $1.50. And you're going to blame all of this on Ukraine? Very convenient.
Because he invaded a sovereign country, that created instability in the markets. That is something the president talked about even before Russia and President Putin move forward with their actions. But we have already taken steps. The president has already taken steps. Historic release from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve.
Which is that is the worst time right now in a crisis, is the worst time to release strategic oil reserves. This is not the time to do it. Not the time to do it. Because not only that, you're going to have to buy back at a higher price than when you put it in there.
One that's done in a coordinated fashion. And clearly we will continue to have conversations with large oil producers and suppliers around the world about how to mitigate the impact.
Okay. That what she just said is very key. Around the world. We talked about yesterday about the possibility of them having conversations with Venezuela, who is best friends with Russia and China and Iran, to produce more oil. Obama did the same thing in his presidency. and now they're doing it. Now there's rumors. Let me lay this very clear, because when asked about this, this has been supposedly a rumor that Biden may travel. We'll see if he actually travels or somebody travels to Saudi Arabia to ask them to produce more oil. So rather than opening up the Keystone Pipeline, rather than allowing federal gas leases to be sold, we're going to go to Venezuela and Saudi Arabia. Now, whatever you think about Saudi Arabia, the fact that we're not looking within the United States, we have enough oil via Alaska, Shell Oil in the Midwest, in Texas, Louisiana, to be able to not only produce enough oil for us, but to be an oil exporter to help Europe and these other nations. Because this isn't just the United States who's having a problem of getting oil. It's the whole world. We've been following this for very long. And even, I want to point this out, even Ilhan Omar understands that this is a bad decision for other reasons, but she understands that this is a bad. When Ilhan Omar is being logical in this situation, you might have a problem on your hands as the president does. And so right now we're seeing this response from the administration. Now, there was another clip I want to play, because this comes into effect with a lot of the narrative, and I think it shows more so the heart of this administration in continuing to blame Putin for this, but I want to play this clip as well. Let me pull this up real fast.
No decision has been made at this point by the president about a ban on importing oil from Russia. And those discussions are ongoing internally and also with our counterparts and partners in Europe and around the world.
See, they're afraid to put a ban on oil, Russian oil imports, because where else are they going to get it? You can put a ban on them now, but then gas prices are going to shoot up through the roof because you're not getting the supply that is needed.
I would note that what the president is most focused on is ensuring we are continuing to take steps to deliver punishing economic consequences on Putin while taking all action necessary to limit the impact to prices at the gas pump.
You can do one or the other. You can't do both. Unless you're willing to open up the
and as you noted, yes, it is true that there has obviously been an impact of the invasion on the level of import to the United States and to other parts of the world. I would note, as we're having these conversations, and obviously the president talked with his a number of his European partners this morning about a range of issues. This was part of it. But if you look at Russian imports, they account for about a third currently
playing down
of Europe's oil imports.
The
so the data we have that's
importance
the most
of Russian
that
oil
we have
here
available at this point in time is back to 2021, not that long ago. But just to give you a point of comparison, the amount that the United States was importing back in 2021 before the invasion was about 700,000 barrels per day of crude oil.
And that's more than anybody else has been reporting. Like, that's not a good thing.
Petroleum. The Europeans import about 4.5 million barrels per day of oil. So obviously we're also very well aware, as we're having these conversations and as we're consulting with our partners, that there would be, we have different capacities and capabilities.
Okay. So now we've seen this response from the administration. And then I want to play this last one before I move on, is Peter Ducey points out a great point of dealing with what is happening. And I want to play this because this is astonishing that the press secretary would say these things when asked this question from Peter Ducey. So we've seen the response of pushing it off, pushing it off, pushing it off, pushing it off. And now we see in another light that she goes forward and after he asks a great question.
Would President Biden rescind his executive order that halts new oil and natural gas leases on public lands?
Well, 90% of them happen on private lands, as I'm sure you know. And there are 9,000 unused approved drilling permits. So I would suggest you ask the oil companies why they're not using those if there's a desire to drill more.
Okay. So that's one response.
Let me finish.
An executive order.
Let me give you the facts here. And I know that can be inconvenient, but I think they're important in this moment. To the contrary, we have been clear that in the short term, supply must keep up with the demand. Where we are, and here and around the world, will we make the shift to a secure, clear, clean energy future? We are one of the largest producers with a strong domestic oil and gas industry.
I wonder why we were. Not anymore. This is not true. This is why we were.
We have actually produced more oil. It is at record numbers, and we will continue to produce more oil. There are nine.
That is false, because when you limit, and I'm going to get to that here in a second, when you limit the ability of oil companies to drill in within the United States, I'll lay it out here in a second. But we're not going to be able to continue to go at the pace we have been doing. And we haven't. What she's saying is ultimately not true. She doesn't give any stats. She doesn't give any resources behind it.
Approved drilling permits that are not being used. So the suggestion that we are not allowing companies to drill is inaccurate. The suggestion that that is what is hindering or preventing gas prices to come down is inaccurate.
Okay. This statement that what we're doing is not preventing anything is ultimately false. And I'm going to go to this article from The Federalist that shows and outlines it very well. Because from day one, when the president banned leases of gas on federal public lands, what this does is this prevents these companies who have to spend billions of dollars in labor and capital from knowing where to position its resources. And when you kill the Keystone Pipeline, and she even said this, that supposedly this doesn't have a direct effect. Killing Keystone Pipeline doesn't have a direct effect on ultimately dealing with the supply issues, even though that is completely unfounded and false. And this article from The Federalist points out very clearly, that the soaring gas prices have a direct effect, cause and effect, from the stroke of a pen from the Biden administration. We've talked about it before. And when you have gas prices at this level, you're continuing to blame the Ukrainian situation rather than looking at the markets as they are right now. President Biden on day one signed the pen and said that he suspended new oil and gas leases on federal lands through legal filing. And we saw how in Louisiana this last summer that a judge overturned that and then allowed a reinstated oil and gas lease buying program. Now, what we have seen from that is also the administration completely ignored that lawsuit and continuing to not sell and provide a future for oil and gas to be produced. And when you shut down the Keystone Pipeline and unilaterally suspend new and oil and gas leases on public land, you prevent these companies who have to learn and know where to put their resources so that they can plan on pulling it out, putting it in Keystone Pipeline, putting it somewhere, sending it somewhere, so that it can ultimately cause the supplies to keep on flowing when there is no destination to send the oil to, which I'll get to that here in a second. Of course, the oil and gas companies aren't going to leave. So when she says, why don't you go talk to oil and gas companies about why the 9,000 leases that are out there that they're not using? Well, maybe that's because you're preventing them from being able to drill on them because you put something out there by a stroke of a pen that says you can't drill oil here. Then let's talk about the fact that in Spain, I talked about this yesterday, Spain, France, and Germany killed all the American LNG ports on their seaboards to be able to take in natural gas and oil, to get it and distribute it through the rest of Europe or their countries. And they went and made contracts with Russia So you can pull the soil out, but it's not going to go anywhere in some cases. And so we're seeing this bashing of the American oil and gas companies, despite the fact ignoring any actions taken by the Biden administration in all of this. And so you're seeing why the Congress and other nations are slow moving on actually banning something that would actually hurt Russia. Because right now, all these countries are saying all this la-di-da-di-da stuff, makes it sound good. Oh, we're putting these sanctions on. That's great. But when you're still buying oil from Russia and the prices that you're buying them at are having them still being able to fund their war efforts despite the sanctions you put on, because they're covering the loss they have on the sanctions. And ultimately, if you watch Steven Crowder, with Lateral Crowder, he pointed out that these sanctions are ultimately hurting the everyday Russians. They're not hurting the military. They're not hurting the oligarchs and the oil companies. The government's still able to do its thing. So I point this out because we're seeing now the administration, the vice president, the Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete, say this, which is utterly appalling. Let me play this video here.
Clean transportation can bring significant cost savings for the American people as well. Last month, we announced a $5 billion investment to build out a nationwide electric vehicle charging network so that people from rural to suburban to urban communities can all benefit from the gas savings of driving an EV.
Okay. A gas savings of driving an EV. Let's talk about that. Because if Americans were to today shift to buying an electric car, the average cost of an electric car today is $56,000 to buy an electric car. If you were to take that money and buy an electric car right now, rather than just say, hey, let's produce gas and lower the price of gas, which they could pay that on the cars now, it would take you 84 years if you were to save up the money you're supposedly saving on an electric vehicle, 84 years to make your money back. Not only given the fact that it takes longer to charge an electric vehicle, our power grids can't support it. The $5 billion he said there is not even a fraction of what it would take to enhance the entire demographic within the United States to be able to provide power to it. And then you also have the vice president at the same press conference saying something very similar and pushing this electric vehicle ideology, this Green New Deal ideology, going forward. It says it's time to make the transition to green energy as she pushes electric cars and clean transit. So, and Jen Psaki even said in her press conference, we need to get away from fossil fuels. We need to go to green, quote unquote, clean energy. Okay. There's a discussion for that. And Elon Musk is probably somebody who is the only person to have a complete understanding of what's going on. And he's even saying, we need to drill oil right now. He says, this hurts my company, but we need to do this because right now this is hurting the pockets of everyone around the world, not just here in America, in South Africa, in Europe, in South America, in Russia, in China, in Japan. Nobody's willing to do what is necessary. And this leads me to my final point. The United States Congress is nearing a deal to aid, let me pull this up, to aid Ukraine, and at the same time trying to fund the government, putting who knows what in these bills, passing who knows what social welfare spending, which is something we need to stay away from right now when we're $30 trillion in debt. Meanwhile, we have people on unemployment, not opening back up for whatever reason. Mask mandates, COVID, and COVID's disappeared. Surprise, surprise. And so what we want to pray for is and intercede for and awakening in the Biden administration for those to be healed, delivered, to be awakened from their state of slumber so that they can see these policies are horrible, see the fruits of these policies ultimately. And we also want to intercede for leaders, Senate and Congress leaders, to have wisdom and revelation when voting for these government spending bills. Look, if we want to aid Ukraine, that's fine, but let's take care of our house first and making sure that we're not continuing to go down a road economically that would put us in an even worse position than we are today. And so we're seeing the hardness of heart from this Biden administration, continuing to ignore the realities of the situation, going towards their political theater agenda, as DeSantis says, with all this COVID stuff, because it's all it is political theater. You're literally traveling around the world when the solution is right here at home, literally via a stroke of a pen. Has caused us to be put in this situation from day one of this Biden administration. And yeah, Trump called it out. That's great. But what we need to do is stay sober, stay at peace, check our emotions so that when we're online, when we're around people, when we're trying to be examples for Christ, that we can be, rather than being right about all this stuff, we need to be love. If we can be love, then we can allow them to come out of this slumber that these people are in, understand that there's a spirit operating and influencing them, convincing them that this stuff is correct, and understand that the Lord never told us to be right. What did he tell the disciples of the greatest commandment? Love thy neighbor. So let's remember that today as we go throughout our day with all this chaos and everything that's going on. We can allow it to let our blood boil. We can allow it to let us just do what's right in our own heart. Or we can focus on what the Lord would have us do. Of being the light of Christ in this situation. Because there are those who were fired for their jobs for apparent reasons that we all understand. The economic crisis that is coming will be a situation for people to be able, us to be able to show love in now and in the season ahead. As the Lord blesses us, we can bless others and be that light, be the transformation that the Lord has called us to be, and stand for kingdom biblical principles now and in the days ahead. So with that, I bless each and every one of you. We'll be back today in Shreveport-Bossier for our noon prayer for anybody who wants to join, and will be online as well for everyone around the United States and the rest of the world. Blessings, and I will see you guys later. Have a good one.